I'll go out on a limb here, and I feel like it's a pretty sturdy one, and say that many of my listeners have read the works of Howard Bloom. He is an investigative reporter, a terrific writer. He is a contributing editor at Vanity Fair, and we'll talk about something that he's written for that recently, but also want to focus on his newest book. He's written The Last Good Night and Dark Invasion and bestsellers, and now this one will be too, In the Enemy's House, The Secret Saga of the FBI Agent and the Codebreaker Who Caught the Russian Spies. Howard Bloom joins us right now. Sir, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Nice to speak with you.
Let's jump right into this. Time will not give us enough time to, or our segment won't give us enough time to cover everything. Let's first of all talk about In the Enemy's House. I was introduced to characters that I had never heard of before, and they, in the midst of the 1940s during World War II, were employed to figure out what the Russians wanted to know and had their eyes open to the fact that Russians were spying on our country at that time. Why was this such a surprise to them?
Well, during World War II, the Russians were our allies. We were giving them war material. Millions of Russians died fighting the Nazis. And one of the heroes of my book, Bob Lamphere, an FBI agent, gets this job working on Soviet intelligence, and he says this is a waste of time. But he teams up with Meredith Gardner, who's a sort of introverted codebreaker working at a facility called Arlington Hall, a former girls' school just outside Washington. And it's there they're trying to crack the Russian codes. And working together, they all feed each other information, and they crack these codes, and they go, oh, my gosh, there's something called that the Russians are running called Operation Enormous. They are infiltrating our Los Alamos project, trying to get our atomic secrets. And these two men, these two unlikely friends, the sort of jovial playboy FBI agent and the introverted codebreaker, go tracking down the Russian spies one by one till they bring them to justice. And it's a path that leads all the way to getting the Rosenbergs.
It is a story that is a spy thriller, but at the same time, I think that what you've done is you've opened our eyes to what is still current and contemporary. When you go back to the two that you just mentioned, you also talk in the book how they struggled with what they said and what they didn't say within regard to the research and the investigations that they did. Explain how that plays into the story.
While Lamphere and Gardner are reading these Soviet codes, and the president doesn't even know that they're doing this. They find out that Julius Rosenberg was an active Soviet agent. He ran a ring of spies. They weren't getting atomic material, but they were getting technical material. His wife, Ethel, was not an active Soviet spy. She didn't have a code name. She knew what her husband was doing. She was involved in recruiting her brother, David Greenglass, to work with this spy group, but she was not an active Soviet agent. And yet both she and her husband are convicted and sentenced to the electric chair. And my two heroes who began this as patriots and also solving a puzzle and going on this mission are then stuck with this knowledge that they can't share this information. They can't tell the prosecutors, the American public, or even the president that Ethel Rosenberg is not guilty. And at the end, their great victory sort of falls apart on them. After her death, they feel that their sense of honor has been betrayed. And what is so infuriating and so damning is that our spy masters knew the truth, but they kept the secret. And one has to wonder today, you know, what is going on? The charges of witch hunts by the president. But what does the intelligence agencies know? Why was Carter Page, for example, wiretapped four different times, approved? These wiretaps were approved by three Republican judges. Let's get the information out there. A witch hunt is just as divisive and just as damaging to the national interest as keeping these secrets.
Howard Bloom is our guest. His new book is In the Enemy's House. But again, he has brought this up to the contemporary situation as we still are trying to figure out what Russian impact there was, perhaps in the 2016 presidential election, maybe before, maybe after that. Why are we so surprised today to, it's the parallels or the comparisons are pretty close in my mind as I say, well, why would we be shocked today? What you wrote about happened 70 years ago. We should have our eyes open to all of this and never be surprised again.
You make a very valid point. Why are we? Why was the nation not prepared for this? And yet, even when evidence is out there, we still see the president is not admitting that the Russians were involved in playing fast and loose with our election. And it's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democratic issue. It's an issue of national security. When Donald Trump Jr. got the information that the Russians had information on Hillary Clinton, he said, "I love it." And he called for a meeting at Trump Tower. Perhaps he should have gone to the FBI. I think we need to get to the bottom of things, and I think our spy masters have to tell us what they know. It's not in the national interest to keep these secrets.
One of the things that struck me is after I've read your book and I was reading about how those who were working for the CIA or the FBI, they were trying to, and then others who were the spies for Russia, the part of the job that is to basically recruit spies. And so then I was reading something this morning about the Democratic response to the Nunes memo, and they were talking about, you mentioned Carter Page, how it said in one line, this is something from the Washington Post this morning, he'd been interviewed by the FBI in 2013 after Russian intelligence agents were observed mentioning him as a potential target for recruitment. So that kind of recruitment still goes on. I'm not sure. I think people know that in movies and books, but they don't know that that still is a part of them, how they operate today.
Yes. I mean, when I started out writing this book, I live on a hilltop in Connecticut. I'm sort of cut off from the world, and I write these little histories. But slowly but surely, I was drawn into events that were happening today. This was not looking for agents of influence, as they're called in the spy trade in the past, but it was happening today. And then when Vanity Fair started giving me assignments, and I went off to London and other places to put the pieces together, and I realized, as you have pointed out, it's happening today, and it shouldn't be. And the first step is for our president, I think, to admit that it's going on and to face up to it and to put an end to it for the interests of our own national security. The spy story I tell about in the past proves that the past is not past.
Can you compare the attitude towards the FBI in the 40s when Bob Lamphere was the man that you start talking about very early in the book and then talk about his work with Meredith Gardner? Can you compare the attitude, reputation of the FBI then to now?
Well, the FBI back in the 40s, they were the G-men who had just gotten John Dillinger, and now they were going after communists. And there was a lot of liberals back then who said the Red Scare was nothing to be scared about. And this attitude toward the FBI started to change. But what makes this so infuriating to me is that our intelligence agencies had the smoking guns. They had the proof. They had the decoded telegrams saying precisely what Moscow Center, as the Soviet spy headquarters is called, was doing. We could have shared this information. So now the president is disparaging the FBI, too, raising questions about our own intelligence agencies. Let's get the facts out there. You were talking about Carter Page before. Let's see why three Republican judges agreed to wiretap him. They must have had the evidence. I think it's in the national interest to share what they knew to make these decisions.
But now people have manipulated it so that if that information is shared, then people are going to make the quick accusation. That's all political.
Yes, that's one of the tragedies of the divisive nature of this politics. And again, witch hunts, the only way to kill a witch or to put an end to a witch hunt is drive the stake of truth into the heart of the matter. That's why newspapers, magazines, journalism is so important these days. Let's get the truth out there, and then people can face it. I think the American people, when confronted with the facts, will realize what's going on.
Well, I'll have to let you go. Just real quick, could you just leave a word with us as to when we hear conversations about the Steele dossier or the memorandums that have been the responses, the Republicans that was a few weeks ago, the Democrats just within the last few days, and all of this tied together. Help us to have a perspective that we need, that you would like for the country to hear as it processes this further.
The Steele dossier, when he began this was opposition research. Politicians do that all the time. And he thought he was just going to find financial crimes on Donald Trump. And you can say he should have been doing that, he shouldn't have been doing that. But then he goes in deeper, and he discovers, just the way the heroes of my book did 50 years earlier, that the Russians were up to something larger. They were trying to manipulate America. And he runs to the FBI to try to get to the bottom of it. I think that's what people have to be aware of, that the Steele dossier was motivated not for political motivations, but to try to really protect America from the Russians trying to manipulate our elections. And the FISA court, there's very strict rules for allowing wiretaps. And as I said before, three Republican judges approved these wiretaps. Let's get the information out there about why they thought Carter Page was necessary to wiretap on four different occasions, and let the people decide if this is a real threat. But to keep these secrets, it just hurts America. Mm-hmm. It's damaging to the national interest, and we all suffer from these charges of wish hunts.
I've really appreciated reading what you've written in Vanity Fair and also in The Enemy's House. I'd say to my listeners, read The Enemy's House. It takes place 50 and 60 and 70 years ago, but still very contemporary, and you'll see some connections. You'll understand more the history of the Russian impact. They were wanting to steal the atomic secrets at that point in time, but they have not stopped trying to influence what is happening in our country. And read the Vanity Fair articles also by Howard Bloom, who's been our guest. Thank you very much for your time today.
Good to speak with you. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Bye. It's News Talk 1400 KFRU. And again, the book is In the Enemy's House, or you can go to Vanity Fair. Good article that you wrote recently called How Ex-Spy Christopher Steele Compiled His Explosive Trump-Russia Dossier. That was one. There have been many other articles written by Howard Bloom, who's been our guest. This is KFRU.